Good morning and welcome back to the Morning Edition on the Cromwell Ag Radio Network. On one side of the coin for agriculture, talking about what Washington can do to bridge producers into the day when the new farm program reference prices kicks in. The other is, what can Washington do necessarily that doesn't cost money? Jed Bauer, I think that's a part of what your board was talking about, is that there are decisions by the Treasury Department, as Senator Grassley said this week, decisions by the Treasury on 45Z, decisions by the EPA on the RVOs and RINs and the rest of the renewable fuel situation of the country, that if there were some regulatory definitive decisions, it would give the industry direction, and it would also help farmers like you to know which direction to go.
Oh, that's exactly right, Jeff. And I know I feel like I'm beating a dead horse when I keep talking about E15. I mean, wow, what a low-hanging fruit. So close again last year getting it done. And we're here again. We're right on the cusp. It looks to be a $4 to $6 billion in savings for the government just to pass this. And we all know what kind of deficit we're in. And then you look across the country, and I know everybody's heard it. I'm even getting tired of talking about it, but you're talking a 20 to 30 cent savings per gallon for consumers across America. And with the piles of corn getting bigger, and we have to be realistic. I mean, our yield trends, and God forbid we see a natural disaster, but our yield trends show us just continuing to be dominant at raising corn. And as those piles get bigger, we got to do something with them. And there's no other market right now that's telling us we need to change the way we farm.
So you could have Washington voting to send more assistance dollars, and that makes sense to keep, you know, to keep this agriculture production machine going. But why wouldn't you make a decision that would allow more revenue to come to rural America and save money for consumers at the pump?
Well, if I knew the answer to why Congress doesn't do anything, I think we would all be in a lot better spot. But unfortunately, as frustrating as it is, we still are in those talks and having those conversations. But until we can get past our lack of bipartisanship and start to have true conversations about what not only helps American farmers, but what helps Americans, unfortunately, Congress doesn't seem like it wants to get out of its own way.
Well, let me pile on one more here just to add, you know, a little fuel to the fire. Not only would we save money at the pump, but if you lower transportation costs, you can lower food costs. So you can help the consumer two different ways. One, in what it costs to get them around to do what they need to do, and also make food cheaper at the grocery store. I mean, if you really want to make a difference, look at the transportation cost and its percentage of the value of the product.
Oh, and that's it. And we do, you know, I as I'm picking on Congress, I have to remind everybody, we have some true champions. I mean, we have quite a few members of Congress that are there every day talking the same things I'm talking about. But the problem is our champions in the Midwest are becoming few and far between. Mm. And we just can't seem to get the message over to the representatives and senators along the coast of the problems in rural America. Nobody wants to listen. And I think you're exactly right. I mean, the transportation cost to moving food products is tremendous. I mean, just my transportation cost around the farm, I've probably seen, I've been farming for 20 years, and I've seen probably 150% increase. And that's just a rough ballpark. It's probably even higher than that. And just me trying to move bushels of grain. It's a dire situation for all of us. And I know, you know, talking with my friends at Soybean, we are all in the understanding that we have to have potentially some fundamental change with the way we look at the process, because we got to have long-term demand, as I mentioned so many times, and we got to bring it down these input prices. Farmers have to have margin like everybody else, or we're not going to be sustainable, and the family farms are not going to survive.
So let's shift over to USMCA. And, you know, there's not going to be any limit to the number of stories that I'm probably going to talk about USMCA, pro and con. But you were right in the middle of the room where people were providing their background to leadership about that trade agreement. What were you surprised from those who were testifying opposed to the deal?
So I think we all went in understanding this aluminum and steel industry. I think there's frustrations there, and I can side with them on their frustration. But there was a lot, just so many sectors. But what really shocked me was parts of the ag sector that were against it. And then I guess as we dive in, you know, fruits and vegetables, Mexico, obviously, ships a lot of vegetables up here. So I think they're looking for some relief in the competition side of things. I mean, we can always go down the dairy side on Canada. The dairy industry has been fighting that battle for as long as I can remember. It feels like the same battle we have with ethanol. But yeah, a lot of the specialty ag side was really pushing back. And maybe not as a complete throw the program away, but they're wanting to see some major overhaul. And it's not that I don't respect their position, but with the way things, as we have seen them with the administration, that to me is scary, because if you start going in and manipulating and changing things, it could be detrimental to everybody too.
So with USMCA, I can understand, as you say, the fruit and vegetables, especially the vegetable size, because they can ship a lot of tomatoes in a hurry across that border, and that makes it very, very tough on the producer here. But if you look at the corn farmer, Mexico is your China, in all reality, and you lose your top market, and boy, you're in a world of hurt in a hurry.
And as scary as it sounds, you're exactly right. I mean, you know, most corn farmers across the United States, myself included, we raise corn and we raise soybeans. And unfortunately, you know, we all know the situation with soybeans. And if you put us in the same position to try to market grain after we lose our number one buyer of corn, there's no way American agriculture can survive.
I don't know if you lose it all, but I also know the advantage that when their president was trying to shove out GMO corn, you were able to go back to USMCA and hold their feet to the fire and eventually break that down. If you don't have an agreement, then where is the baseline for these sanitary or phytosanitary issues that can prove certainly a roadblock to sales?
Oh, absolutely. And we did. I mean, as we went through that Chapter 31 hearing on those issues with the biotech traits, it worked out well. I mean, we seen the issue with us moving our corn into Mexico because of that. And Canada come in on our side. I mean, the rules blatantly state everything needs to be science-based. And Mexico, as everybody remembers back, was looking at that from an unscienced.
They had an opinion.
They did. And I guess, you know, as we look at that, it wasn't science based. So therefore it didn't, you know, it didn't fit with the agreement, and it worked out great. You know, we filed the complaint, we went to arbitration, and Canada come in and everybody looked at it and said, no, you're not meeting this agreement by trying to propose the anti-biotech traits. So it didn't work for the Mexicans, and if we were in their shoes, it wouldn't work for us. I mean, the rules are there for a reason. They worked exactly how they should, and that's why, obviously, we're pushing for a full 16-year extension to this.
Well, the other side is, if you had lost that with Mexico, if you didn't have that bottom line with Mexico, then what was to keep Vietnam? What was to keep other Southeastern Asian countries or others coming up with their own set of rules? But because you won that fight with Mexico, that set a standard for trade for the rest of the world.
It truly did. And, you know, as you talk about Southeast Asia, that's our next biggest probably market looking ahead. But it also goes back to the EU. We've been fighting that battle for a while. And that showed the EU that we were still strong in fighting for our agreements. And as we look even further ahead, maybe into Africa, Africa looks at the EU for a lot of their wording in their agreements. And we have to stay strong there and keep proving that the biotech traits are safe. It's science-based. The science proves they're safe. And hopefully that'll just that's going to allow us. It will allow us to increase our markets.
All right, Jed. So what's on the National Corn Grower Association Christmas list with Santa Claus?
Oh, we've got a big one, but I think most ag groups do right now. Obviously, I want to get E15 done. I don't know how many past NCGA presidents have said that, but I want to get it done. I would like to see this extension on USMCA come up. I know we're a little ways out, but we got to keep having hearings. We got to keep talking about what it has done for rural America. And then we got to look at this assistance program. I mean, we got to keep our farmers profitable. We got to allow them the ability to farm, whether that looks like another bridge assistance, whether we're looking at finishing up the farm bill. And then we got to keep having conversations, obviously, with the administration about pushing corn around the world or pushing grain around the world for all agriculture or meat products. We got to build demand. And then, as always, at least, well, I shouldn't say always, but as we've been talking about the past few months, we're going to keep looking into the input situations and try to figure out what's really going on. You know, is it truly the cost of them producing our inputs, or is there other underlying factors? But we can't afford to plant a crop with the inputs the way they are. I mean, they're truly record levels. They have been for the past few years, and we all know what our markets have done. So that's my wish list for Christmas.
Well, I hope Rudolph and the gang can bring that along your way. Jed Bauer with us. He is the president of the National Corn Growers Association. Merry Christmas to you, friend. I'm Jeff Daly. This is the Morning Edition on the Cromwell Ag Radio Network.